The House Committee on Education will come to order, and I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2064 and House Bill 2060. I'll wait for Roxy. Oh, that's okay. So, Rexy, do you have an overview of the bill?
Mm-hmm. You have my preliminary SMS in front of you on both bills. 2060 is a pilot proposed pilot project that would allow the Department of Education to identify some of the factors necessary to have a good screening program for school children. The original bill is K through 12. Proposed amendment would be first grade through fifth grade. And there's an allocation of that, a proposed allocation of $300,000 for the study and for the pilot projects. This bill and the subsequent bill, 2064, are both a result of the Interim House Education Committee came up with the bills, and then there was an appointed task force, a work group, that worked together, put together some proposed amendments, which you have printed in front of you. So that's 2060. And 2064 is actually a requirement that the Department of Education conduct, required that all children 7 years of age entering school have a certification of a screening test. And it provides that if there's a religious objection or if there are financial difficulties, that the child can be exempted. In the case of financial difficulties, there's a provision that the school districts provide for the screening. And then there's a subsequent requirement for screening every 2 years. Both of these have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And let me see what I'm forgetting. I guess that's about it. Like I say, again, you can look at the SMS and get the information.
Thank you, Roxy. And Representative Wisnett, would you like to come and introduce yourself and give an overview?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, honorable colleagues. I'm Representative Gene Wisnett, District 53. And I had the distinct honor and pleasure of working with all the colleagues in the back during the interim on these two bills. And I'll apologize to them. I have judiciary at the same time, so I'll be not able to stay and listen to their testimony to you on this important bill. Madam Chair and members, I was contacted about this end of last session by Julie Bippler, who is Executive Director of the Children's Visual Foundation. I was briefed on her program, which is a nonprofit organization that does visual screenings in the school systems. I was very impressed by her program, and with the permission of Representative Buckley, who was the House Interim Education Committee Chair, we had an informational meeting on the Oregon ODE visual screening program in the February 2008 interim session. Representative Buckley asked me to chair after that meeting because all the members of the committee, some of them, my colleagues here, I know Representative Comp and Huffman and who else was on that committee, and Representative Roland, we thought it was worth looking further into that issue. So I agreed to chair a work group to see if we could address the program. During the interim, we first submitted a work plan, which Representative Buckley approved. The work plan, we agreed to look at the current program, determining if legislation was required to improve our existing program. Actually, in district, I attended a screening conducted by Julie Bippler's and her colleagues' program in Deschutes County. It's very impressive how many students that they could screen and how quickly and professionally they went about their work. At our first work group meeting in Salem, In accordance with our work plan, we reviewed the current status of Oregon's visual screening as required by OAR 581-9022-0705. This is part of ODE, it's manuals, and that says that school districts shall maintain a prevention-oriented health services programs for all students that provides visual and hearing screenings. And we actually had people want us to start looking at hearing. Let's say, let's go visual first before we get into hearing. You're going to hear testimony this afternoon, I'm sure, that's going to tell you how important visual screening is to our children and why we need to address this program. I won't go into all the details of why we need this program. I think you're going to hear a lot of that. Visual screening programs should, it states in the ODE regulations that they should be conducted under the direction of the school nurse. And we all know the burden that our school nurses face and the shortfall we have of school nurses now. So after our first meeting, and these meetings, as you know, in work group meetings, are there's no money for expenses but we had excellent staff. Dana Richardson, who is the committee chair, she worked real close with me and the stakeholders in our meetings. After we reviewed all what we had, at that meeting, we also looked at what ODE was doing, what other agencies were doing, and what other nonprofits and volunteer organizations were doing. And we discussed the visual screening objectives for Oregon, and we determined how and if visual screenings could be provided, and we wanted to look at the most cost-effective way to provide these visual screenings. At our second meeting, we started the process, because we knew we had limited time, of drafting legislation based upon model legislation from other states. We determined that we should provide initial screenings and ongoing screenings and drafted two bills to address each concern. At our Salem work group meetings, we had a large number of stakeholders who actively participated in this important work. And we were glad that Representative Kotek joined us for her on our work group and provided insight from the health services. We even looked at adding visual screenings to the health department's program for shots. I forgot the term that they used to record the shots that are required. After the second meeting, we went ahead and drafted some legislation, but we received suggested changes, but time had run out on us submitting committee bills. Thus, the House Committee Education Committee went ahead and submitted the bills that you have, 2060 and 2064, but we had amendments for those bills, which I understand you have now, too, that you'll be looking at and passing as amendments to our bill. We just time ran out in trying to get the amendments into the bill. So we held it after we submitted the bills, and some people were unhappy that we submitted the bills knowing that they needed amendments, but we wanted to get them in as committee bills. We did hold a third work group meeting with all the stakeholders and went over all the language in the bills line by line, word by word. And we came up with the amendments that you have, and they were majority supported but not unanimously, and you'll hear that today. I discussed our situation on the bills and the amendments with your chair, explaining that one option would be for me to submit the bills and work them as individuals or have you, and I'm glad that you decided to work the bills. I want to be sure that the students get this improved program rather than having my name on the bill. And that's where we are today, and I'm very glad to work with you and hope that the committee will accept these amendments and pass the bill. As you know, 2064 requires proof of initial visual screening when first entering schools. Please remember that 70% of children are covered by comprehensive eye exams through private insurance, Medicaid, CHIPS, and other state and federal programs. We will need to identify funds for the 30% not covered. However, in our research in our work group, we discovered that Kentucky passed the first law requiring eye exams. And they initially set aside $150,000 for those 30%. But they've now reduced their request to $50,000 per year due to lack of demand. We found that the professionals have volunteered their service and that they find other ways to get their eye exam before they enter the school system. And, of course, HB 2060 directs ODE to conduct a study and develop a model program to provide visual screenings to public school students. And I want to compliment here, Morgan Allen attended all of our meetings representing ODE and provided valuable input. And he, and I think he said he would pay for all of this.
I'll send him a note and let him know.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
He's in the room.
Hopefully, ODE will use the Children's Visual Foundation and other nonprofits to establish a program to provide ongoing screenings at minimum cost. Recently, I met with Julie Biffer's board, and we believe that they could provide 8,000 screenings a year for about 200,000, which is $25 per screening. The issues you still face is you must agree on the amendments, and you must review the physical and decide how much physical you want to submit. But I do ask this committee to please please do pass the bill, and for our children, this is an important issue and important legislation for our bills. And I'll be glad to take any questions. And as I said, I apologize. I'll have to go back to my committee, and you're going to have some excellent testimony by some people who are very passionate and concerned about this issue. We may not all agree on the words and the details, but I think that we can come up with legislation that will help our children.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for Representative Wisnett? Representative Springer?
Thank you, Chair Gelser. In your work group, and maybe it was here, I missed it, were there any school staff people involved in that work group?
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, we had people in school boards, and I don't know that we had individual schools. I think the Portland school system did send some nurses. Nurses were, it's a nursing requirement. So we had the ODE nurse staff, and Julie Biffer, because she's worked with so many school districts, provided some testimony or, and about how school districts are doing it now and what they can and cannot do. Hope that answers your question. You might get, and other people could maybe answer. But I think we did have a good representation. It was a lot of professional people and people from the public health aspect. And again, I think it's very important. This is an ODE requirement. They have it on the books now, and we're just looking for ways to do it, to improve it and do it more efficiently.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. Excuse me. We talked about this a little earlier. I'm thinking this is a great program, but having said that, I'm feeling like it's yet another mandate on our school districts. Okay. Is there any way that we can just let the individual school districts know that these different entities, private entities out there, would be available to provide resources, equipment, and what other personnel and other resources needed that they're going to spend money on a study for, and let them know and let them each individually buy into that as school districts rather than mandating it from the top down?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Thatcher. I understand and I support your position to not add more mandates, but it's already a mandate on the schools. The schools have to have the program. We're just saying they're not doing, we need to refine how the direction to them. And there's no legislation in it because it's all in the rules. So this would say, you know, you've already got the requirement to do it. And it's, I think it's as important as curriculum. If a student can't read or can't see to read, you're going to have a lot of problems. So I appreciate your statement on the mandates, but I don't really look at it as a mandate. We're trying to, I think the Department of Education, the school districts have the requirement now. And some of them are doing it, and they have an ongoing program. But we did not see in our study, our work group, that it was being done across the board as the way it should be.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I just wanted to make a comment for Vice Chair Springer. We have, I believe, the National School Nurse of the Year sitting in the audience that participated, so I'm sure Carol can recognize herself later.
Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having been a Head Start director for 22 years, These are critical areas which we take care of the very first 45 days in Head Start. Kids get screening, they get heights and weights, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've perfected a system over the years of help. The question I have for you is that I find myself getting confused between, is the intent for screening or is the intent for a professional examination or is the screening for referring a child to have the exam? So I'm trying to figure out how that, how you perceive that.
Madam Chair and Representative Van Orman, the two bills, one bill says we're going to require all of our students when they're entering the school system the first time to have a, and that's what you as a committee are going to have to decide, an eye exam, a screening, a comprehensive eye exam. That's what we got to in the work group, defining what we're requiring.
Okay.
I want a screening. And I'm happy to leave it at screening. Other people you're going to hear from today, the professionals are going to want that to say comprehensive or whatever. And we can, the rules, we don't have to do that in the bill. The rules can define in more detail. If you say you want a visual screening, then the rules can determine what that will be. But so the first time they enter the system, up to, I think, you talked about 7 years old or something, that you have to have proof that you have that. It's just like a shot record. You as a teacher don't want to get a student in and not know that student had a visual problem until it comes up later. And then there'll be an ongoing program to follow up because the eyes change. So you'd have a program that would, the pilot program would be to do the follow-up screenings, not the initial.
Okay.
So the initial screening, first time they come in the system, so you document that and put it in the health record that they have had a screening. And that could be later and not the Head Start. And we had discussions in our committee about that. A lot of people, in an ideal world, we'd like to have the baby screened, and they keep getting screened. And because some of the tests or some of the problems, I learned more about eye problems than I probably need to or had time. But, some of these problems turn up at different ages, and some of them need to be identified at birth, and they can be treated that way. But we're addressing the program in ODE right now.
Follow-up?
Yes.
Well, I simply would like to state that if these exams and screenings are conducted, it allows us to catch these impediments to success in school. And it's these health issues are critical for children.
Thank you, Representative.
Two questions, Madam Chair.
Of course.
Okay. Representative Wisnett, quickly, because I know you have to get to judiciary. Two for one day. So, and I apologize if you addressed this and I missed it, but not all schools have school nurses, so how would that be addressed in those schools?
Madam Chair and Representative Huffman, thank you. Good question. No, it would the superintendent or the principal, anyone could do it if they don't have a school nurse. Even though they don't have a school nurse, the administrators still have that requirement, and they have to make arrangements. So, yes, that's a good point. I think our bill just says it's under ODE, can set it up or something. And so that's a good point. It could be refined if it needs to say about a school nurse that the school principal or school superintendent would be in charge of arranging the program, because the follow-on program, I guess, is what you're talking about. Because when the student comes into the school, they're going to have to present that certificate to the school secretary or whoever, saying, I've had a visual screening.
Okay. Question number two, buy-in from the optometric community. Did they work on this, or
as I said, we had a lot of good input and a lot of work. And one of our meetings, I think some of our meetings were 4 hours that we really worked. There's a lot of interest on this, and there's a difference of opinion. The thing that you're going to have to handle or decide as a committee, how you define the big issue is a screening, comprehensive eye exam, an eye exam, or how you're going to say it, because different professionals would like to have different things. But my goal is to do what we can, get started, and be sure that our children have some sort of screening. And hopefully the follow-on screenings will pick up other problems that whatever we come up with. So that was our biggest issue. I think everyone was there to do what's right for children, but they have difference of opinion. You'll hear that today on what it should be, a comprehensive eye exam, an eye exam, a screening, or whatever. So my friend's back there.
Thank you, Representative Winslet. Any further questions? Right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, again. And I appreciate the committee working this, the work group, and there's a lot of time and effort put into it, and I hope we can come up. I realize this is a bad year to be asking for money, but again, I think all of you realize that this money spent can save us money if that child drops out of school, and you're going to hear those sort of things, and doesn't progress. We'll be saving the taxpayers' money. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wisman. Could we have Julie Bibler and Donna Dingell, please?
All righty.
Welcome to the Education Committee, and up to you who goes first, but just introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, Madam Gelser, and members of the Education Committee, it's my pleasure to have this opportunity to speak with you today about, specifically for me, about House Bill 2060 and the proposed amendments. For the record, I am Donna Dengel, the Northwest Region Director for Prevent Blindness America, and I have an office in Tualatin, and I was part of the task force that Representative Wisnett mentioned. Prevent Blindness America is the nation's leading health and safety organization dedicated to fighting blindness and preventing, preserving sight. We recently celebrated our 100 year of service with our centennial last year. PBA's focus is on public and professional education, advocacy, and research. And we provide the only certified vision screening training program in the country. On the back of the statement that I provided for you today, you will notice a listing of our National Board of Directors and our Pediatric Advisory Committee. You will also notice that this is a balance of expertise between pediatrics, ophthalmology, and optometry. And you'll probably hear more of those representatives today. The Pediatric Advisory Committee is continually assessing the literature on vision screening and examinations to assure that our position, PBA's position, on the utility of vision screenings and our protocols reflect the best knowledge that we have in research-based practices. But let me reemphasize again the differences in terminology. An eye examination must be conducted by an eye care professional, whether an ophthalmologist or optometrist. Vision screenings can be conducted by school nurses, school staff, volunteers who are well-trained in solid vision screening protocols. Not every child needs a full eye examination. The expense places an undue burden on families and consequently our schools who are trying to fill the gaps. The purpose of screening is to find the children who truly do need a comprehensive eye examination. Then the resources can be focused on them hopefully for the exam, but then treatment follow-up. PBA has made vision screening a priority for over 50 years now in good economic times and bad because it's a generally accepted practice. During the current economic times, however, it is imperative that we're really cognizant of the challenges that families have and certainly our schools. Screenings are really the right answer for any economic time. As Representative Wisnett mentioned, Oregon law requires vision screening in our schools, but there's really no standardized practice. Too many schools are using some antiquated screening tools, don't have the resources they need, and really too little support for the high-quality programs that they need to provide. We are really fortunate, I think, in Oregon to have community resources like Julie's program, our program, Lions Club is also represented here today, to provide the different kinds of support that's needed. The school nurses are responsible to implement the program, but they need support from organizations like many of ours. With this legislation, then, the process can begin for us to really find appropriate standards and to establish a criterion of at least a minimum criteria of standards. Prevent Blindness America firmly believes that vision screening is the most cost-effective, most efficient means to assure that all children then receive the vision assessment necessary for the health, not only the health of their vision, but for their academic and life success. So I thank you for this opportunity to share this with you and open for questions, or Julie's turn. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Julie.
Chair Gelser, this is my second time, I guess, doing this. So, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and visit on a thing that we all feel very strongly about, and that's the ability of our children to see, well, and to be able to see well in doing that.
Julie, success. I'm sorry to interrupt. Even though we all know who you are, the tape recorder does not. So okay. Could you please introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you.
Thanks.
I am Julie Bibler with the Children's Vision Foundation. I am the director, and I have been screening thousands of students within Central and Eastern Oregon. Does that help?
That's perfect. Now go on.
Okay. So last February, I sat in front of this House Education Committee, and I expressed some information on behalf of what vision screenings were happening here in Oregon. We had heard from the Oregon Health Forum that there were thousands of children out there that they had no clue whether they were having any vision screenings at all that would normally be done by school district nurses. And we knew the 54 districts did not have any nurses. So we've been working in communities along with the children's, the Oregon Lions, to provide those screenings. Now, our screenings are a little bit different from the Oregon Lions. We look for near and distance acuity, hyperopia, fusion, tracking, depth, and near point of convergence. Those different pieces have been deemed important for child success. 15 to 25% of our children out there have vision challenges. 80% of their learning is done visually. So as you know, that component is essential to making sure that they can be seen well enough to be doing well in class. Often, they don't even know it. They simply are sitting next to a person, that person's getting it, and they may not be getting it, so they're struggling. I talk to teachers and students all the time that say, I thought I was stupid. They got it. I didn't get it. I thought something was wrong with me. I've had teachers say, you picked my entire low-end reading group up, Julie. These are my problem kids. You can't see that one because he's down in suspension down in the principal's office. We see this consistently, and I have to say all over the communities. We've been over in Grant County. We started in 2001. We saw about 155 kids. We had a referral rate of 29.5%. We go there every other year. We screen all first through fifth grade. We do the reports. We talk to the teachers. And we come out of there with a cost-efficient program that can give them the information that they need for their vision. We've gone from a 29.5% success rate to a 14.5% success rate by a biannual process like this, and that's 8 years, and I've been watching these numbers. I've shared those with you and these blue packets that I've dropped off for all of you, and there's plenty of information in here, okay? So I don't want to go through all of that, but we know the program. We know how we can take care of these kids. We know that these nurses are having difficulty trying to take care of all the other things that they have going on. And we've got one of our lead nurses in Ben Lapine on our board of directors who says, we can't take care of all of that. We used to be able to do distance acuity with first, third, and fifth in kindergarten. We can no longer get to that because we have too many extreme needs. If you could take care of the school district, Julie, we would appreciate it. We have community and school volunteers who remain very strong. Some of them have been with us for 8 years. And we really see the difference in those students that we referred out. We go back in and check again the following year, and we're seeing success. I could go on, and I've got information here, but really what I need to focus on for you guys today is that there is extreme need out there that is not being taken care of. We know that there's all these issues, and I know that there's a real financial challenge. And Jean, Representative Wisnett, mentioned $25 per student, and we could drop that down even to 20. So if we're looking at $8,000 per student just for their, you know, for the day, that is, I mean, for the per year, per student cost. And if we take care of $20, and we may be able to get it down even lower than that, we don't know yet, but we needed to give you a figure to see what we could do. That's a big investment for these children. And together, I think we can come up with a system. So I am speaking on support of both 2060 and 2064. They're not perfect, but it's a step towards what we need to be doing, and that is identifying those students and getting them care.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Revlin.
Thank you. A few, I guess. But the first one, You're thinking screenings are more important than a regular exam for these entering kids? Is that what I was hearing?
Madam Chair and Representative Rowland, our intention is to get full vision exams for the children who need it. So screening is a step in that process.
Okay.
And the thing, because children's vision change frequently, you can provide more screenings over time. They do need them. Vision changes from year to year. So providing ongoing screening is really critical. It's not just a one-time deal.
Okay. That's good to know.
Great. Representative Dimbrough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're talking about public school students now. What mechanisms do we have in place, or how are we doing outreach to private school students, you know, homeschool, online charters? I assume they're covered because they're public school. Can you tell us how they fit into the total picture?
Julie can go first, and I'll go second.
Madam Chair, Representative Dimbrough, we actually have been going into different private schools. They contact us quite often. We also have a series of community screenings. So, like Barnes & Noble has had that open, and I've got that out to the homeschoolers. I've had all sorts of different people come into those community screenings, all the way from Hillsborough and Salem to Maupin, from Gilcrest, so a variety of different students actually participate in that. It does not mean that we catch all of them, but we do provide those opportunities. Thank you.
Just a follow-up. Should we be requiring them to be part of this program in some way? I mean, do you think we should be looking at that, if not now, down the road?
Madam Chair and Representative Dimbrough, PBA does this a bit differently. My position began July 1st, so we opened up the regional office here. I've been in Oregon 23 years, but they hired me in this position to do that, exactly that type of outreach. The way we work with our organization is my role is to train screeners and then set them up within a variety of organizations and a variety of venues. What I have already done is worked with the Linfield School of Nursing, train students, and there's also a cadre of students from PCC's ophthalmic technology program. And then I send them to private schools and private clinics, and we've been doing ongoing screenings that way. That's certainly something that you could look at in the future in terms of setting up that sort of expectation. But my mission here in Oregon is to find them and provide those services, and I'm working with several academic institutions to have the screeners available to do that sort of thing. And it won't be just Portland area. It will be statewide.
Thank you. I think Representative Rowland.
This is kind of a statement and a question. I look at this and I refer back to my own personal experiences of being this dyslexic kid that started having eye exams in first grade and had them every year until they found a need for glasses in middle school. And they never really did identify my learning disability because they weren't identified at that time in history. You know, my subsequent brothers that came along later all were identified as learning disabled early on and they had some different things that worked for them. The concern I have is I see the need for all of these. The eye exam by an ophthalmologist or an optometrist or whatever really can look for eye disease. And that's a really important thing to find out early because that can create problems for that kid the whole life.
Right.
But there are also screenings that that ophthalmologists and optometrists don't really do that have to do with, you know, the way the brain reacts when it sees and tries to interpret what's going on in there. That was my problem. My eyes worked just fine, and they told me that a long time till I was in middle school and they found an error. But it is finding out how do we deal with those kinds of things. And I think from my perspective what I've seen is there are some screening and I've seen optometrists that actually practice that, but there aren't as many that have those other kinds of skills. Or at least getting people, teachers and others, so that the first idea about their child isn't that they can't learn, but that maybe there's a problem both with the vision or the way the brain is taking in that information, and we need to figure out, eliminate those first. And I guess, do you see that happening both in your screening and in the kinds of things that you're doing with your organization, the two separate, disease and then learning disability type?
Exactly.
And I'll let either one of you answer how you go about that.
Madam Chair and Representative Rowland,
a critical component of our screening protocol is what we call our ABCs. It's appearance, it's behavior. And so we will, whether we do an acuity test and the other tests that we do, even if a child doesn't come up in that as needing a vision, if we see something in the behavior, if we hear a report of the behavior, that child is referred. Learning disabilities are a very complex circumstance, and we're all learning as we go along with this. And there are things, tests, and processes that have certainly improved since the time when you and I were in school and looking at those kinds of issues. And it's the kind of thing we need to stay up on top of. What screenings can do is capture the greatest majority of issues, vision issues that we need. Learning disabilities and vision are very closely tied. And it's the kind of thing that when you have that individual student, you have to keep pursuing that student and find out that child's need.
Can I also approach that, please?
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I do want to connect with going in and actually talking to the teachers. So when we go in and do these school screenings, I do teacher in services. I share information that you have in your blue packets quite often. They'll talk to me about these different individuals. And when they ask me about things, I'll say, you know, that sounds like it could be a vision piece. We only identify, we don't diagnose, but I would suggest them having an eye professional eye care help with it. So does that help?
It does. Just one follow-up comment, and this is the part that's always been the hardest for me when I was a principal and others, is that the student you're talking to, mm-hmm. only has one experience, and that's through their eyes mm-hmm. and their brain. And so they don't know that there's anything wrong. And we oftentimes have schools point out that there's something wrong with them, or parents point out something wrong with them, or others, when in fact they are what they are. There's nothing wrong with them. They just may have different needs if we're going to expect them to use it in these unique ways that we do in school. So from my perspective, the reason these are so important is that we have these young people who are going in there and thinking that they're going to have this great experience in school learning things, and they may have a functional disability that doesn't allow them to have the advantages. And if we can't, as the adults in the situation, help them find that out, as opposed to blaming them for being lazy or blaming them for doing things wrong and acting out, in response to not being able to figure out their world, mm-hmm. I think we have done a real disservice. So any of these things that we can figure out the best way to get the most kids seeing and figuring out how they perceive the world, which may be different than the next person, but then give them the tools so they can interpret it, is really important. And I hope that we figure out a way to move this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. Representative Springer.
Thank you. I have helped with vision screening, mm-hmm. if it can be called that, at my son's school many times, and what's scary is I was qualified to do that. And it consisted of walk up to the line, point your, cover up one eye, and not too hard or you'll not do well the next time, and point which way the E goes. And I've done that many times. So I know part of the conversation we're having is getting us to a point of defining what a screening is. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? What are some of your concepts of a screening that's beyond this mom that's not qualified telling the kid to point in the direction the E is going?
Go ahead.
Both want to answer that one.
It's too much fun, sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Springer. There is a variety of things that need to go beyond the tumbling ease, as we call that. The Snellen chart at distance 2020, where you cover, is based off, well, it was created back in the Civil War era by Lieutenant Snellen. And it was created to make sure that the soldiers that they were sending out into battle could see well enough to go and shoot somebody versus getting shot themselves because they couldn't see it. That is our standard. It was always created on battle, never on education. And we know a lot more now and 150 years later about the needs. So that's 25% of your classroom ergonomic ability. A child needs to be able to see that board 25% of the time. Another 25% is taking that information information from there and putting it to here. And additionally, 54% is done right here, but we've never had anything even checking to see if they could see here. If I was to bring back those 29 kids that we saw back in 2007 in Grant County, I checked those individual reports, that information. Of those 29 students, we had 7 of them fail the distance acuity only. We had 3 of them fail the near acuity only. We had additional 7 that failed the near and the distance. If we had just gone with what we have now in the state, we would have missed over half of those students having vision challenges. So that's what I can see as being important to taking this next step up and helping our children.
Follow up, please.
Yes,
thank you. One thing I haven't heard mentioned in the conversation, and maybe we're just not to that point yet, color deficiency testing. And you're probably going to correct my stats, but I believe it is 12% of males tend to be color deficient. So you take 100 kids in a school. My son goes to a school of a little over 200. That's a lot of kids. And when you talk about math and the foundation of math in kindergarten and first grade, it's grouping of shapes or colors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult when you ask the kid to differentiate and add the blue blocks and the purple blocks, and they say there's 12 blocks total. So is that something that will be addressed here?
Madam Chair and Representative Springer, this is why we need this legislation, because we need to have this conversation.
Yes.
Our protocols are very different from the protocols that Julie uses. At PBA, to be specific about color issues, we feel that those generally come out in behavior. A teacher will pick up very quickly, you know, if a child is not associating colors. We usually pick that up in preschool. So that's not one that PBA looks at. We look at other issues. But that's why we need to have this conversation here in Oregon. We need to set the standard in Oregon. What are the criteria and protocols that we think are most critical here? And which of the ones are most efficient will reach the most children? You think Julie and I have interests? Wait till those behind us with their protocols. We want to have this conversation. We want to be able to establish something in the schools that is really effective and really meets the children's needs. We haven't even discussed amblyopia and the bigger issues. The number one cause of blindness under the age of 40 is amblyopia, and that is something that really should be corrected before the age of 9. There are many critical issues out there, and that's what we really need to focus on, and that is not an eye problem. It's a neural issue. So this is a critical time in a child's development for school success, and we want to get the right screening and the right screening tools. That's a critical piece of our assessment. To make sure that we make sure that children are treated and get the full examinations that they need and the children who need them.
Thank you. Thank you. Unless there are burning questions, we have a lot of people who want to testify. So I think we're going to move on to the next panel. Can people hold until? Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Hale and Dr. Marusich, please. Welcome. And if you'll just introduce yourself for the record.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Carol Marusich, and I'm in private practice. I've been in Eugene for 28 years in private practice. And this is Dr. Jim Hale, who's joining me. He's been in private practice in Corvallis. And Jim and I did participate in the interim work committee, and we also participated in the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association group. We represented them at that group, and we represent them here today as well. And we appreciate the opportunity to talk about the issue from a little different perspective. I've been working 28 years with children in Lane County. I've worked very intimately with the Lane County Oregon Head Start and also with the Early Intervention Council. And so I've worked with a lot of young children over the years, as well as children with special needs and mainstream children. My practice is primarily pediatrics. And I really applaud your willingness to address this issue. This is a huge issue, for not just for the children in my practice, but for children in schools everywhere in the state of Oregon. these kids really are struggling with undiagnosed visual issues that impact their learning. And, you know, none of us are alone in seeing that. We see it in our friends and neighbors, and we're certainly seeing it in our children. What we'd like to do is talk about the goal that I think is the goal of this legislation, and that's to make sure that every child is prepared to take advantage of excellent teaching, outstanding programs in all the schools in all over Oregon. And to do so, they really have to be prepared by bringing the skills they need to the table. And unfortunately, a lot of children don't have that opportunity in Oregon today. Just from my practice, you know, and in your copy of this, you'll see just a number of students that I pulled up. One young man, Gage, 10 years old, struggling, fifth grade student. He had a high IQ, but he was learning disabled, struggling in special education classes. He passed all of his pediatric screenings. He passed all of his school screenings. He was diagnosed with convergence insufficiency, eye movement problems, focusing problems, which usually are harder to detect in kids, especially kids high IQ. They have wonderful compensatory strategies. Unfortunately, it doesn't allow them to be successful in the classroom and certainly not to work up to their full potential. And so he was diagnosed with those conditions. Following treatment, he made dramatic improvements and within 1 year was caught up to his regular classroom and now is a very successful high school student. Just last week, I saw little Mikhail. Mikhail was reportedly having trouble learning his letters. And so this is a little guy that the parents were concerned about. The teachers were saying, well, he's just starting in school. Give him some time. He passed his pediatrician screenings and his school screenings. And that no vision concerns had shown up other than just the parents' concerns. So this was my last Monday. This little guy sits in my chair, right eye, 12 diopters farsighted, left eye, 13 diopters farsighted. The average child this age is about a half to three-quarters diopters farsighted. So extreme farsightedness, bilateral amblyopia, and his best corrected vision with lenses was 2200 in each eye. And he's in school right now. And he passed all of his screenings. And I have little ones who have passed screenings in the past as well. Lila, age 8, also, no concerns were picked up by the pediatrician or the school, diagnosed with no eye turn. So sometimes the children whose eye wanders are the lucky ones, because at 18 months, 2 years of age, we know something's wrong. These other little guys, nobody knows. There's no way to tell. The eyes look perfectly normal, and they function well. Their behavior is fine because they're seeing with one eye. And so her right eye didn't cross, but she did have amblyopia in her right eye, which was interfering with her eye screenings. And then Jordan, 5 years old, learning difficulties, headaches, squinting, rubbing his eyes. Again, he passed both his pediatrician and his school screenings and was diagnosed with an eye turn, small angle, and amblyopia. And so that's the concerns. These aren't the only children. There are many, many kids who come to school and they're the right age, and we assume that they have all the underlying skills they need to be ready to be successful, but they don't. And so we try to check and do screenings, and I think people have been very good about doing that. Pediatricians try to do screenings, and they're doing lots of work with these kids. They're trying to look at developmental screenings. They're looking at health issues. They're seeing many, many children a day. It's very hard for them to do a screening that's going to pick this up. And so they really need a little bit more, as these kids needed a little bit more. So here's what the research is saying. We've heard it before. 80% of the children have learning issues during their first 12 years. And 80% of what they're learning is coming through vision. 25% of school-age kids have vision problems that are diagnosable and treatable. 60% of the students identified as problem learners have undetected vision problems. And the references for these studies are on your handouts. 70% of juvenile offenders have undiagnosed vision problems. And so you can see the at-risk group, what happens when they can't be successful, these bright kids who aren't able to perform to their ability and meet their needs. Comprehensive examination does diagnose vision problems and eye health problems early. You know, it reduces the risk of learning problems and in some cases reduces the risk of blindness. And that's our goal. Eye exams are important because many conditions affecting overall health, especially chronic and systemic diseases and developmental problems, really cannot be recognized in a screening. Even the most sophisticated screenings can leave more threatening problems unrecognized. The recent NIH study of screenings said
Dr.
even
Marusich?
With the most high... Oh, yes?
We're getting a little bit of feedback on the microphone.
Oh,
can
I'll
you push
up.
It back a
Thank
little
you.
Bit? Thank you.
Even the National Institute of Health study that was just out in the last year or so said that with highly trained screeners, some of the screeners were doctors, they missed more than one-third of the children who should be referred for comprehensive exams. So even when doctors are doing screenings, children are missed. That's why they're called screenings and not examinations. They're not comprehensive, and kids do fall through the cracks. When the child receives a screening report that says eyes are normal, vision is normal, you passed your screening, sometimes it creates a false sense of security that everything's okay. And I have many children who do come in who had screenings, and the parents don't know the difference. They'll say, oh, he had eye exams at school his first year, everything was fine. Or he had two eye exams at school, everything was fine. But with some underlying conditions, everything's not fine. Convergence insufficiency, there was a recent study just published in 2008, the Convergence Insufficiency Treatment Study, and it defines convergence insufficiency, which is one of many diagnoses. You know, a common binocular disorder with no eye turn, the eye doesn't turn in or out so you can't see that it's there, often associated with a variety of symptoms, and sometimes kids have no symptoms. But some of the symptoms they could have would be eye strain or headaches, blurred vision sometimes, most often not. Some kids see double, but they think everybody sees the same way they do, so they don't understand that seeing two of things is not typical, so they rarely report that symptom. Sleepiness, but we often see that as children who can't maintain attention. They have a hard time concentrating. They may lose their place a lot. They have lost poor comprehension, and they don't know why that's happening. And so sometimes a lot of those struggles are identified as other issues, attentional issues. Certainly it's hard to maintain attention when you can't keep it focused, you can't keep your eyes working together. So there are no visible signs of this condition, really, and it can only be diagnosed during an eye examination, and that's what one of the principal researchers in that study concluded. So our feeling is that if we need to be doing something, we need to be looking at these children, and the best possible way to address this is to address it the same way we address other conditions. We don't want children in our schools who are not healthy, who can't learn because of underlying problems, and a comprehensive eye exam is the best way to identify those children at risk before they enter the school system. Let's make sure they're ready. Let's not guess, and let's not wait till they're in school for 2 years and struggling before we take a look and say, well, they're demonstrating behaviors of underlying problems, let's check. We really need to look and look thoroughly to see what's going on. And as far as refractive amblyopia goes, that is easily identified during an examination. And regardless of their ability to participate or not participate in the screening, it's not a subjective test. It's objective testing. With retinoscopy, you can tell exactly what the refractive state of that eye is without having to ask which is better, one or two. And with early examinations, you could eradicate refractive amblyopia. You could catch it early, treat it very early, and none of these kids would have those problems in the classroom. And so this is our opportunity to make that happen. So I really applaud you in opening yourselves up to discussion of this. Thank you very much.
Dr. Hale.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I too applaud you on your hard work on this issue, and it's an honor to testify before you today. The recognition that these children need a comprehensive eye exam to be sure they're ready for success in school is a significant step forward, so I'm very pleased to be part of this process. House Bill 2064, as drafted, does not include provisions for initial comprehensive eye exam upon entering the school system. In addition, it doesn't include any provisions to judge the efficacy of referrals or treatment for children that have not passed a vision screening. It does nothing to assure that the children are receiving the care they need to take advantage of the educational opportunities that our schools have to offer. We would like to urge the Education Committee to amend House Bill 2064 so that both an initial comprehensive examination and periodic comprehensive screenings be required for Oregon school children. We believe that a grace period of January 1st after the beginning of the year would provide ample time for compliance and address any concerns regarding the ability of eye doctors across the state to provide children with the examinations. initial concerns about a potential financial burden on families who couldn't pay for an examination were proven unfounded in Kentucky, where just such legislation as the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association is suggesting. The legislation was passed in the year 2000, and as Representative Wisnant pointed out, initially they allocated $150,000. That was then reduced to $50,000 because it wasn't needed. And in fact, in the year 2005, only $5,000 of state money was used to pay for examinations. So in Kentucky's experience, this has been a pretty nominal expenditure and has resulted in over 5,000 children being identified with vision problems. Approximately 13% of those needed glasses, and numerous other health problems were identified, including a brain tumor in one case. So a preventive vision examination program would result in long-term savings of funds expended for special needs students and those requiring special education services. A recent study of special education in New Jersey concluded that children with reading difficulties who do not receive intervention services are much more likely to be classified as requiring special education. So their commission found that early eye exams and intervention could save the state of New Jersey as much as $200 million in special education funding. Comprehensive eye exams are much less expensive when viewed over the long term, especially when compared to the medical and social consequences of missed eye pathology and poor vision over the same period. So again, thank you for allowing us to speak on this important issue. The Oregon Optometric Physicians Association is committed to supporting legislation to truly improve children's vision in Oregon. House Bill 2064 needs to be amended to include enactment of a comprehensive eye exam program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have a question for both of you and for others that come up later. Do you think we provide a false sense of security to families when we have screening programs that aren't comprehensive? I think of our own experience. We have a daughter who did her periodic exam every year, and she had these terrible headaches. Never occurred to us that she would have visual problems until her pediatrician sent her to an ophthalmologist, and I thought she was kidding when she was doing the exam. I thought she just wanted glasses, but she really couldn't see. But she had done really well on all of those screenings, and I'm wondering how common that experience is and if we do more harm than good if we have screenings that aren't comprehensive.
Madam Chair, if I can address that. I see that all the time. I see probably 50% of my patients are children in grade school, and that is a common occurrence, is that we see children, they've passed all their screenings. A number of times I've seen them come in with significant amblyopia, and how they passed the screening, I really don't know. I did have one young girl, and I'll never forget, I asked her, how did you pass your screening? And she said, oh, it was cinchy. First I went like this, then I went like this. Nobody caught it. Nobody caught. She was 8 years old and saw 20/200 out of her left eye. And so things happen during screenings. It's hard to screen a lot of children en masse. You are using subjective results. You're asking them to tell you what they think they see. And so any subjective test is just that, subjective. And the younger the child, the harder it is to get reliable data. That's one of the goals with comprehensive examination, is it's not subjective. You're looking in there. The doctor is looking objectively and testing vision, testing to see what does it take to focus light in the back of that eye so that it can be clear, and regardless of what their responses are as to what they see. You know now what does it take to do that, and you know whether it's clear or not. And so with the technology today, there's just very little reason for these children to not receive what they need. And it's very discouraging when I see children come in at 7, 8, 9, even as old as 12, and I see more 12 and 14-year-olds outside the school system where things are not discovered until very late. There are no outward signs and symptoms for these children. Some of them have no behaviors that would indicate it, and most of them have no clue that they should be seeing differently, because that's their world.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Thatcher?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know your testimony was on House Bill 2064, but you did mention some other states implementing the program that you're advocating. And I'm wondering if any of those states, if you're aware, if you're able to comment on this, for instance, 2060 is requiring an appropriation of $300,000, $100,000 of which is to go to implementing,
I guess, minimum criteria, and figuring out what resources they would need and all that. And then $200,000 for pilot projects. I'm wondering, did these other states go about it the same way, or were they able to do it for much less? You mentioned Kentucky's, what they did, but prior to that, did they do studies that you're aware of?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, members of the committee, I had an opportunity to meet with three states back in June of 2008. They were Kentucky, Arkansas, and Massachusetts. Kentucky having a comprehensive eye examination law, Arkansas and Massachusetts having a screening law. And one of the things that the two screening law states told me was that if you pass a law without a very firm tracking system, you'll fail kids in the screenings, and even if you mandate that they get an eye exam, they just won't do it. In fact, in Arkansas, they told me that they'd done some research, and about 50% of kids failing screenings did not go forward with any kind of eye examination. So it's our opinion that a comprehensive eye exam really is the only way, a comprehensive eye exam on entering the school system is really the only way to definitively, you know, start the process off on the right foot. In terms of the funding, I have some documentation, and I'd be happy to forward that to the committee, but I can't comment on it at this time.
Thank you.
Out of memory.
Thank you, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, Representative Thatcher took one of my questions, and I'll just say my hope is that we'll soon have comprehensive health care access reform, and some of these financial matters will not be so pressing. But I do have a question about the length of time that an exam takes as opposed to a screening. Is this something we should be concerned about in terms of, you know, it taking up the school day and, you know, how we can work that into the routine of the school year?
Thank you.
Most of the bills that have passed in other states, comprehensive examinations were not done at the site of the school. The comprehensive examinations were taken care of the same way vaccinations and other medical requirements are taken care of. And then they were indeed tracked the same way, so there wasn't, you know, a lot of outside information that needed to be gathered. And so it became the parents' responsibility to make sure that that was taken care of the same way they had to take care of other issues for their child to enter the classroom.
Madam Chair, Representative Dembro, members of the committee, interestingly, in Massachusetts, the screenings can be performed in the school system or in the office of a licensed eye care provider, and there is reimbursement from the state for that service.
The screenings or the examinations?
So they would allow screenings to be performed by an eye doctor in their own office in the state of Massachusetts.
Representative Van Orman.
Ms. Maris, you said that you had worked with the Head Start program in Lane County, and I'm curious to know how those children progressed then into the system of public education, and if, in fact, the Head Start approach to vision was working so that these children were indeed ready for school.
Madam Chair and Ms. Van Orman, what we've done in Lane County is I designed a screening that they would use, and if they had doubts about that, or if the child was unable to participate, or if they had any concerns, because the federal government does mandate a screening be done within a certain period of time at Head
Start. And they don't pay for it.
Yeah. Well, that is an issue. And so those children were then referred over if they were unable to complete the screening, if the screening results were questionable, or if the teachers had any concerns. And most of those children were covered for those services. Most of them had Oregon Health Plan, or they were eligible under some of the other organizations that fund examinations for children, meaning Sight for Students, the Oregon Vision Foundation. So there were other avenues they could use. And, you know, we've always had an agreement with Head Start that any child who needs services receives services. So I see those children at no charge. And so in that group, we've identified children with Coats disease, children with other retinal diseases, certainly children with high astigmatism. It's astounding what you can find. And most of the children who were unable to complete the screening had significant issues. I mean, they were not minor, subtle issues. The children that if you were to take the 25% of children who have problems in school, 5% of them have eye disease, 3 to 5%. The other 20% have those types of underlying functional vision problems that are more subtle, that are much more difficult to catch. And so in that Head Start community, it's a much higher risk community for health, and we're catching a lot more health issues in that group. So it's a little bit more specialized group because of that.
Thank you. Representative
Brooklyn. Yeah, two real quick questions. One is, do we have the professionals that have the pediatric eye knowledge to do this for all entering kids, if that was a requirement? And do we specify that and including rural areas, and do we specify that they have to have had special pediatric eye exam, or do we assume that anyone with a degree in optometry or ophthalmology would be okay?
Madam Chair and Representative Roblin, I would say that certainly any optometric physician or ophthalmological physician would have the qualifications to identify the children at risk for that. If the committee was interested in come up with specific guidelines of what you'd like to have looked at, I don't think that would be problematic. I mean, we're looking at certain subtle things with children. It's not just eye health, although eye health plays a significant role. And it's not just visual acuity. Lots of nearsighted individuals who can't see well far away are outstanding readers. It's that combination of how does everything work together, and looking at all of those issues, and that the more comprehensive you are, the more likely you are to pick up those children at risk. And so I would assume that those examinations would be well in good stead for identifying those children.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's not for this panel. a question. And Chair Gelser, because I taught high at-risk students, mm-hmm. and many of them had identified eye problems but refused to conform with what they're supposed to be doing with that, and they are currently in the Oregon State Prison System. I was wondering if we could get information from our prison system as to how many prisoners have eye problems, and when they... I don't know if we could do any kind of a survey, but I really do know firsthand that it is a big problem for some of those children all the way through, and then they get into the really serious behaviors.
Thank you. We'll look into that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I should disclose that Dr. Hill is my optometrist.
That's awesome.
And I really like my glasses. Morgan Allen, please.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen from the Department of Education, and I just had a couple of brief comments I wanted to add. We appreciated the opportunity to give our input to the work group, and I think folks worked very hard, and you guys are going to have to ultimately decide what those exams or screenings look like. But I just wanted to point out a couple of things in House Bill 2060, and I spoke to your committee administrator, and she asked me to come share these with the whole committee. The first is in the amendments that you have, the -1 amendments, it appropriates the money to the department on July 1st, 2009, so when the next biennium starts. The bill still has an emergency clause in it, so if this were to pass, say, in March or April and signed into law, we obviously couldn't do anything until we got the funds, so I just thought you might want to check with legislative council to make those two things consistent so that we could get started this biennium if at all possible, or, you know, make the bill effective July 1st at the start of the new biennium. And the second thing is, we're very grateful that there's funding included in the bill to do the work. And I had our folks take a real hard look at the sort of the task force work, the creation of the standards, and, you know, what could we really do that for? And so our folks think we could probably do that for in the range of $50,000. There's currently appropriated in the bill $100,000. So if you guys are going to make some more amendments or as this goes through the process, I know the budgets are tight, and we thought that we would share that before it got too far down into the process, so that it could be helpful perhaps in ultimate passage. So I would be happy to answer any other technical questions. I feel kind of guilty. I wear contact lenses, and I didn't wear my glasses today, so I feel like I should have for some reason.
Great club. Any questions for Morgan?
Right.
Madam Chair, the issue for me in this is not that we don't like this. This is great, you know, and I would love to do it, but it's still, it's money. I mean, and we're in a bus, and we're flying over the cliff. And so I'm asking the Department of Education, what are you going to, you know, in your budget, what would you be willing to give up to pay for even a task force?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a very good question, Chair Gelser and Representative Maurer. In our, just to kind of give you a broad overview in 10 seconds or less, the Department of Education has approximately the same number of staff as we did 10 years ago. And as you know, the landscape of education has changed quite a bit, particularly with No Child Left Behind and the increased emphasis on assessments and data and things like that. So our agency is essentially the same size as it was 10 years ago with many more mandates on us and our school districts for data and those types of things. Under the governor's recommended budget, we get our essential budget level, but we know that that's probably not realistic given the budget situation. So, you know, I could go back to the superintendent and sort of talk to her about priorities, but, you know, we run a pretty tight ship as far as our budget goes, and I don't know if we could identify a few $100,000 even within our current budget. We are undergoing the exercise right now of cutting about $500,000 because of the governor's across-the-board reductions, and we're anticipating that because of the revenue forecast that'll be out in a couple weeks, that we may be looking at further cuts for this biennium. So we're in sort of the same pickle that you as a legislature are in, trying to prioritize things. But that's why I wanted to sort of offer up that we could do it for less than was sort of in the bill. Hopefully that would help a little bit. But that's probably the best I could tell you off the top. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're talking about what it would cost the Department of Ed. Do we have any idea what it would cost local school districts if they had to implement this?
Chair Gelser and Representative Van Orman, again, sort of the high-level look of this right now, under Administrative Rule Division 22, the school districts are required to screen their students for vision and hearing, but it's very wide open, and as we've heard from some of the folks testifying here today and from many of your own experiences, that can vary from district to district, and it sort of depends on the availability of school nurse and other things like that. The House Bill appropriation in House Bill 2060 would give the department $200,000 that we could ostensibly then pass along to school districts to help them implement these pilot programs. I'm certain that wouldn't cover all of the costs of the school district. So, you know, I would recommend, you know, you probably would want to hear from some of the education groups like COSA or OSBA. They might be able to give you an idea of what the school districts are spending. That's not a piece of data that we track, how much staff time or how much they're spending on their current vision or hearing screenings or health programs. So.
I'm sure they're relieved to know that.
So.
Thank you, Morgan.
Thank you.
And on that note, Chuck Bennett.
The only other problem though is every time we don't listen to the things, we continue to be in excess of $200 million, $300 million because of the level.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And first, I want to thank Representative Wisnant for the outstanding work that was done during the interim on these issues. We participated as one of the stakeholders in a number of meetings, and it was really an excellent work group. Like each of you that wear glasses, I can tell you my personal experience with glasses and fifth grade Progress Elementary School in Opportunity, Washington, and they couldn't figure out why. No, really, it was true. It was fated that I would be here today. What causes. Yeah, I think Representative Roblin put it sort of, what's wrong with it? At that point, it was, what's wrong with Bennett? You know, why would he have behavioral issues and all these things? Well, it turned out I couldn't see the blackboard. I just frankly couldn't see it. Had no idea I couldn't see it. I wasn't particularly interested in seeing it at the time. Until my ophthalmologist discovered that I just really needed to get a pair of glasses, and it really did change everything, and hence I'm the man you see today. So I think all of us have those kinds of experiences. we support these bills. There are going to be costs. We do these programs now in most of the districts under Division 22. I want to call your attention to page 2, lines 35 to 37 in House Bill 2064. Annually, the Department of Education shall prepare a report regarding the implementation of this section and shall submit the report to the appropriate legislative committee. And those words will show up in a number of bills for you this session. I'm sure they have in the past. What they've resulted in is an ongoing cost that we have been examining along with other partners, including the Department of Education, in a group we call the State Reporting Paperwork Reduction Task Force, and we'll be presenting a report to you on it. What we have found is statewide, and this gives you a sense of how vague these numbers are, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 FTEs are currently devoted to state reporting, to answering questions from the state in behalf of the federal government or others, and it'd be reports like this, just trying to provide information out of the school districts to policymakers. We would ask you, when you see language like this, whether in this bill or others, that you give us a break this round. 500 to 1,000 FTEs statewide is a substantial number. We would like to not be held to an annual reporting requirement on these at this point, at least to the extent that we're burning off the number of FTEs we are statewide. Suffice it to say, you ask us to do it, we'll do it. You fund it, we're even more likely to do it. And that, I think, is probably just a true as you look at the situation during a session like this one in an economy like the one that's been created, and hopefully we can all come back in a couple of years and fund all the studies you want, all the teachers you want, all the exams you want, and all the rest of it, but this is not that session. So we'd ask you to take a look at least putting the reporting on hiatus and pass the other portions of these bills. We think they're very good.
Thank you. Any questions for Chuck?
I have a question, Chair. Mr. Bennett, are there districts out there now that are doing, that are requiring exams, you know, as opposed to screening?
You know, I don't know. I wasn't asked that question, so I didn't come prepared. Let's just assume there are. If there is an option, and particularly if there is a less expensive option, you're probably going to get a mix across the state. And I would assume screen. I'm trying to think of what I've heard in discussion on this. I won't assume anything. I think I'll just stand back on it and let these folks talk it out with you in terms of which is the better way to go.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
David Wheeler and Amy Goodall. Yes.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Amy Goodall, representing the Oregon Academy of Ophthalmology, and we participated in the work group, and we're happy to do so during the interim. We support House Bill 2060 and 2064 with the -1 amendments that came from the task force. And with that, I'm going to turn it over. I have the president of our association, Mary DeFrank. She's a general ophthalmologist who sees children and adults in Hillsborough. And then we have Dr. David Wheeler, who's a pediatric ophthalmologist at OHSU's Casey Eye Institute.
Go ahead. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing us to be present today to discuss this very important matter. My name is David Wheeler. I'm an associate professor in the departments of pediatrics and ophthalmology at OHSU. So I spend most of my day seeing children with eye problems at KCI Institute in Portland. And I can tell you that there is definitely room for improvement in the way we're doing screenings currently. And I applaud very, very heavily your willingness to look at this, even though it almost certainly will cost some money if we do it what I consider to be the correct way.
I want to mention that there's thousands of physicians in Oregon that aren't represented here today, and those are the primary care doctors that do almost all of the health screening on almost all of our children. And I guess my approach would be that it's very important to have a vision screening performed at the time of school entrance, for example, as well as periodically during school progression. However, the most important time to identify these problems really isn't when the child is 5 or 6 and maybe only has another year or so to have a problem identified and treated. It's really in the preschool period of time when children are old enough to be verbal and be testable, but still have the maximum opportunity to have the problem treated. And that's why at CASE, partnering with the Elks Association of Oregon, we've been involved in vision screening, partnering mostly with Head Starts for the last 5 years or so. Right now we're analyzing the data from the previous year, which is about 2,700 children. We believe that we've patterned our screening after what Prevent Blindness America recommends. It's very consistent with the published guidelines by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Ophthalmology in terms of what a screening should involve. And we believe we're doing a good job of identifying those children that need a comprehensive eye exam. Most of the people that I know throughout the country, there's a lot of interest these days, as you well know, in vision screening, and I'm on various committees and different organizations looking at the best way to do this. Most of us believe it would be great if the resources allowed for everyone to have a comprehensive eye exam. It would probably be great if everybody could have a comprehensive everything exam, but that's just not practical. Somebody has looked at the cost of a comprehensive eye exam across the country with a very reasonable assessment of what it would cost to screen versus what it would cost to do a comprehensive eye exam. And the delta between those two numbers is over $325 million. So for just the state of Oregon, looking at the current numbers of children entering kindergarten and entering first grade, the difference between comprehensive eye exams and a good, properly conducted screening that's very likely to identify problems is over $3 million. A year. So while it might be great if we had the resources to do that, I just don't think, especially in the current economic climate, that it makes a great deal of sense. I also think there's a lot of maybe misinformation about the value of a comprehensive eye exam. To my knowledge, there's nothing in the literature to indicate that a comprehensive eye exam is going to be any better than a screening exam at picking up eye disease. That study just hasn't been done. Now, perhaps it is, and it kind of makes sense that it might be, but that information really isn't out there. And if we go on the evidence that is there, there is very, very good evidence to suggest that screening is accurate and it's very cost-effective. I have many references that I'm happy to run down for the committee and provide in terms of scientific literature to suggest that. So our position is that we strongly support a vision screening. I think it makes sense to mandate that. I think it can be done in a cost-effective manner, and I think it will definitely pick up the children that have managed somehow to escape detection. But I still think the main savior, if we will, of children's vision problems is going to be to identify them before they ever get to school by working to improve our vision screening methods in the primary care office. To that end, I'm involved in a yearly course for primary care physicians and their office staff, and have been involved for the 11 years I've been here in Oregon to try to improve our ability to accurately screen children for vision problems. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Representative Norman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I'm sorry, I apparently have all the questions today. One of the things that comes to mind as we're talking is, having served on the other side of the mountains in rural Oregon and sometimes remote, the access to care, especially when you're talking about a comprehensive exam, do you think that so there's a way we could get around that? Because I can envision that some of these areas will not have access.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Orman, I can just tell you that our experience in the last 5 years is that we have not had any problem with care being available to children that have failed the screening. The problem is that they don't always go, you know, and that's not something that this committee or any of us can mandate, unfortunately. One of the unique aspects of our vision screening program is that we have spent thousands of hours having people follow up on the failed children. So in the last year, and this is true for most of the large, well-established training screening programs throughout the country, there's about a 7 to 10% failure rate. And so we have tried to track down every single one of those, and we found that really only about two-thirds or a little more went for a follow-up eye exam, despite the fact that our people were armed with resources to help them get in if they couldn't afford it, et cetera, et cetera. But we were able to get every single record for the children who did keep an appointment for a comprehensive eye exam. And so that's one of the things we're in the process of doing now, is looking back and seeing how accurate our screening was, so that we can use that to improve the process. But there were no children who were unable to obtain care if they chose to follow up.
Thank you.
Senator Dimbrough.
Thank you. I just have a question about the editorial that you gave us, Dr. Wallace in ophthalmology. Is he writing for the journal or the academy, or is this kind of a pro-con sort of thing?
Madam Chair, Representative Dimbrough, I think it was published in a very respected journal of ophthalmology. Usually the way these things work is that one is asked to write an editorial, presumably because one is thought to have some expertise in this matter. I think if you look at the legislative packages that have passed in several states, there are three states that have mandated comprehensive eye exams. There's four states that have mandated vision screening. And the best one, in my opinion, is the one from Massachusetts that has already been mentioned up here earlier, where they mandated a screening that could be done. A comprehensive eye exam would certainly count towards fulfilling the requirement, but the screening needed to be done by either a trained layperson or a physician in a primary care office. I think that Dr. Wallace's point in writing the editorial was just to look at the current state of what we know about comprehensive eye exams versus screening and try to assess the relative merits of both. And I think he does a good job of stating my personal belief.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Catherine Bradley, please. I know you're signing up for both bills, but you can offer your testimony on both.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Bradley, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health with the Public Health Division in the Department of Health Services. And I'll speak briefly to both House Bill 2064 and 2060. Just a couple of general comments. We are speaking in opposition of 2064 as it was originally written, predominantly because of some of the cost issues inherent within the registry, which I'll speak to briefly, as well as some concerns about confidentiality and privacy. Both of those have been amended in the Dash 1 amendment, and therefore we are supportive of the Dash 1 amendment. Then the 2064, in general, the Public Health Division is supportive of both population-based vision screening and comprehensive vision exams for children and youth. We do follow the guidelines of the American Academy of Pediatrics in much of our recommendations in relation to the vision screening. And you'll note in our testimony that we do cite a cost-benefit analysis, a link to that from the National Institute of Health, where they actually took a look at the relative value between vision screening and comprehensive vision exams. They do recommend that states start to consider comprehensive vision exams as they can. We certainly do recognize the economic challenges of the current climate, but did want you to know that there was that resource that was available to you. We also conducted a survey in the fall of states to find out what their current activities were. We found that it was close to two-thirds of the states in the country are currently requiring some form of vision screening. There are only three states currently that are requiring comprehensive eye exam requirements, and those states are Kentucky, Illinois, and Missouri. And as you've heard, there's quite a bit of information about the Kentucky model. We also would draw your attention to the fact that none of the states are currently funding registries. We appreciated our opportunity to participate in the task force. We are very proud of our current immunization registry alert, which I think is the standard that the task force was looking at and was trying to identify as a possible opportunity. We would be very pleased to be able to do a tracking and recall registry, but have to advise to the committee that there's a considerable financial impact for that. Currently, we'd estimate that it's close to $500,000 to get it set up for the IT resources for all of the work that would need to be done behind it, and then to maintain it on an ongoing basis would run close to about $200,000 and about two FTE. We also do want to remind the committee that there may be secondary costs for DHS that could include increased general fund dollars for children under Medicaid for comprehensive vision screening. And then finally, as was originally outlined in Section 4 of House Bill 2064, it appeared that there was some attempt to set aside some of the requirements under FERPA and HIPAA about some of the child health records and child privacy issues that we were concerned about and were not in support of. However, that said, we do support the amendment. The amendment addresses our concerns about the registry. We are also supportive of the intent of House Bill 2060 and a task force. The department would look forward to participating in the task force. We do reserve the right to amend our fiscal statement if the intent is that staffing is provided from the department. We'd probably need to ask for some funding for that, but to participate and contribute to the task force, we'd be pleased to do so. Those are all the comments I have. I'd be pleased to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this in the governor's budget?
Representative Maurer and Chair Gelser, it is not.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Yes.
I guess I'm somewhat now disillusioned or concerned about DHS because I get one day it's not in the governor's budget, so we can't support it. Not this issue. And this issue, it's not in the governor's budget, but yet you support it. And it's not you. I'm not pointing a finger at you. But it just is somewhat frustrating that it just depends on what the message is. Maybe it's the messenger. But I guess I have a concern that is DHS really in favor of it, or is it just the Public Health Division that's supportive of it?
Chair Gelser and Representative Maurer, the Public Health Division and DHS are supportive of vision screening. The literature cites the importance of considering comprehensive exams. The governor's budget does not accommodate for a registry at this time, and therefore we are not in support of the recommendation of the registry. We did participate in this task force, and that gave us the opportunity to have this conversation, and it was our understanding with the amendment that the intent then was to really shift the work over to a task force to really look at what are some of the needs that this group has already spoken to in terms of consistency with standards and a way to really sort of move forward with this, perhaps also to bring some recommendations to the next legislative session that we are supportive of and we would like to participate in that.
I'll stop.
Because
I'll just bite my tongue and stop.
I have a follow-on question to that. If I'm understanding correctly, is it that in 2064, does the Dash 1 amendment remove the DHS impact from the bill?
Chair Gelser and committee, yes. In 2064, the Dash 1 amendment removes the requirement of the development of the registry. It was our recommendation, actually, that we use the task force opportunity that is spoken of in the amendment to House Bill 2060 to really do a more in-depth exploration of what might be some other mechanisms that this might be done. But at this time, the request simply for a recall registry comparable to what we do with the immunization alert, which we're very familiar with, was a pretty tall order to speak up to.
Thank you. And with that Dash 1 amendment then in 2064, I understood you to say in 2060 your fiscal might change depending on who would be responsible for staffing the task force. Would there be any fiscal impact from DHS on 2064 with the Dash 1?
There would be, Chair Gelser and committee, there would be no fiscal impact. It would be neutral for the Dash 1 on House Bill 2064. And at this time with our reading of the Dash 1 amendment of House Bill 2060, it's also neutral. We just wanted to state that we just wanted it understood that we welcome the opportunity to participate in the task force. We are assuming that the Department of Education is offering to staff the task force. Hopefully my comments have clarified that.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there other questions for Catherine?
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, too, Madam Chair. Are there federal dollars for eye care for children? Do we receive through Medicaid or?
Chair Gelser and Representative Van Orman, I actually don't have the knowledge for that, but we would be glad to look for you for the department and provide a response back to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Carol Cochran, please. Thank you for being patient.
My name is Carol Cochran. I'm a school nurse, and I am humbled and appreciative of the expertise of all of the all of you and all of the people who have given testimony. I'm here basically representing the trenches because I'm in the schools and I'm working with the kids and I'm doing the vision tests and I'm referring them. And I appreciate this chance to give my thoughts on this, and I want to especially warmly acknowledge Representative Comp, my past colleague in Woodburn, in my experience, a fierce advocate for children and their health and safety needs. So thank you, Representative Comp. I have talked with other school nurses. We don't have a position from the Oregon School Nurse Association, but especially House Bill 2060, which is advocating for a task force, we very strongly support because we would like to see the subsequent bill be evidence-based. And you've heard a lot of discussion, comprehensive eye exam versus screening, et cetera. And our idea with the task force is to bring all of those to the table and come up with the best recommendation. So my hope is that that House Bill 2060 is used to further define 2064 before it is finalized so that, again, we're using that best evidence. I will say that Oregon is, in our nation, number 49 in the ratio of school nurses to students, which is a little embarrassing, but we're hoping to work on that. And one of the things that makes it possible for the kids to get the resources that they need is that there are so many organizations and volunteers and people working together to see that the children who are identified through screening get the follow-up that they need and deserve. And my hope is that part of the outcome of this, although it's not a stated one, is that as people are working together to define and come up with recommendations, that there's a pooling of resources, not just defining a standardized practice that we can all expect, but also a pooling of resources, and so that east of the mountains, as well as the Portland metro area, all the kids have access to those resources. And I'm one of the ones that have made referrals, and as questions have come up, I've been back there saying, I know. Like that, the question of, you know, what if they pass the screening, but they're having headaches and behaviors, et cetera. The screening is just one test. And I'm just talking about my practice here. The screening is one test. So if they've got headaches or they're having other issues, I consult with the vision resources in the community. I send a referral, and through my organization, I have what's called VSP coupons to use to help fund that. The Lions Club comes and helps with screenings. There are lots of resources out there that, again, if we work together, we can make these available to students. One of the things that I am advocating screenings, because it seems like we can bring the screenings to the students, as opposed to the comprehensive eye exam, which I would love to have that available to everybody. But if we've got choices that need to be made, it seems like the comprehensive health eye exams, we need to bring the students to the exam. And that's very problematic. I work in Sheridan, which has which is a not a rich community. And even though they've got access to McMinnville, that distance, especially with gas being what it is, people don't have the cars or the gas money to even get there. So in order to make vision screening accessible to the kids, having it available throughout the school life, that I'm hoping that you find a way to support that for our students.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Norman?
No, I appreciate her. I appreciate the fact that she's actually in the trenches.
Yes. Further questions? Thank you very much. And thanks for your patience. I saw your arm going up back there a couple of times. Is there anyone else left to testify that we've missed?
Ma'am, it did drop right there.
Oh, thank you.
I saw it drop.
I felt it drop to my ear.
Yeah,
it. I'll look for it later.
It's under the desk.
Just okay. In front of the...
See, I need probably...
It's a test.
But we're helpful.
Well, thank you very much. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2060 and 2064. Three of you have come to me today to let me know that you will not be here on Friday. In addition, a promoter of one of the bills that we're hearing on Friday has asked us not to hear it yet. And as a result, I'm thinking it might be a good idea. I know you all want to be here on Friday afternoon, but I think that we will postpone our meeting on Friday since we'll have low attendance and we're losing part of our agenda. So you can free up your calendar time on Friday.
Thank you.
From 1 to 3. And with that, anything else for the good of the order? No. Great. House Committee on Education is adjourned.